listening to KBOO Portland. It is 7 o'clock. And next is Keeping It Real. I know you might be tuning in for Heart Knock Radio, but first Wednesday, 7 p.m., new show. Not really new show. It's been on 5th Wednesday. You can still listen on 5th Wednesday, but now also on first Wednesday, 7 p.m. Keeping It Real is next. Stay tuned on KBOO Portland.
Of the street with each step, walking closer to my final destination of death. When I'm laying to rest, I'm only saving my breath. The northwest fills the lungs, heals the pain in my chest. Take 6 quarters out of the pocket and drop it in the box, hop the 48 off to pay homage. It stops often, I jot my observations, watching citizens walking off of the Joe Metropolitan. Yeah. Proletarians and wayward sons with old Filipino men speaking in their native tongue, and the day has just begun, greeted by the scent of a bum smelling something like beer, barf, and dung.
Yo, what up, Portland? What's going on? This is your boy Aron
and Nick Deasy,
and this is Keeping It Real. Keeping It Real is a show where we bring you the latest news that's not talked about in social media, but we also give you perspectives from North Portland. I got Nick Deasy with me. Go ahead, Nick. Tell him a little bit about yourself.
I'm 17. I'm a senior at Rosemary Anderson High School, and that's actually why I met Aron there almost a year ago. Well, yep. A little bit over a year ago.
It's been about a year and a half.
I'm graduating this year.
Yeah.
That's 2017.
Let's go 2017. Nick Deasy is one of my students. I'm one of his teachers. My name is Aron Andu. I am a person who transplanted here from Seattle, Washington. I teach at Rosemary Anderson High School, but I also coach and mentor in North Portland. This is a show that we wanted to have, and thanks a lot to Cable Radio for giving us this opportunity. We are able to explore cultures. We are able to explore different news. We are able to explore issues that not only adults go through every day, but also youth, and we have the perspective of youth on this show.
Also, we gotta say thank you to Delphine, because a little bit over a year ago, Delphine came to the school and taught a radio class, and ever since then, we're interested in it. And none of this would have happened without her.
Thank you, Delphine.
Oh, thank you, guys. But I mean, really, you make it happen, because radio is a lot of work, people, and I don't do the work; they do the work.
Thank you, Delphine. We are very humbled. So today, we are going to explore many different subjects, including politics, one of my favorite subjects. And we're going to talk about many things that range from Donald Trump to Obama to Russia.
And we're also going to interview Delphine at the end of our show.
And yes.
What are we going to interview her about, Nick?
We're just going to ask her about her involvement in radio journalism and what steps she's taken to get to where she's at now.
Okay. That sounds great.
I'll be ready.
Okay. Looking forward to it, Delphine. So, for our first topic, we wanted to talk about the news segment. And the first thing we were going to talk about is, well, we all know that Donald Trump is coming into office. It's 2017, and we're still stressing about that. But at the same time, we are going to speak about the Obamacare. So one of Donald Trump's first orders of business is to repeal the CARE Act. What do you think about that, Nick?
I'm not going to lie. I don't really know a lot about it or about Obamacare, but
you want me to tell you a little bit about it?
Yeah.
So apparently the GOP decided that the first thing they were going to do once Trump is in office is sign an executive order to begin the process of repealing the CARE Act. But they have not talked a lot about what they would do in place of it. So they have decided that this specific health care plan, it's not good for thousands and thousands of Americans. However, they haven't really said much about what what they have in plan, right? Like what other plan they have to replace this one. And so, I don't know. I think that it's kind of nerve-wracking to see that, because at the end of the day, if you want to replace something, right, and let's say the Obamacare is not perfect, obviously, but if you want to replace something, wouldn't you have something ready in place of it? Like, wouldn't you have a backup plan, and you would have this plan thought through?
Yeah, that's like when I was leaving an elementary school in first grade, they was tearing it down, but they already had, you know, a school in place. So
yeah,
I don't think you should ever take something away without having something in to replace it or better it.
Right. And, you know, and in politics, you get a lot of finger pointing, right? They have that, the idea that you're going to blame somebody else for everything that doesn't go your way, but take credit for things that work, right? But I really think that both parties could actually buckle down and sit down and have intelligent conversations about what they could do to change instead of this pointing fingers and, this is so-and-so's fault, but this is not my fault. It just does not make sense to me in this day and age that we are still trying to counter each other as political parties instead of looking for a common good, which is what's best for the people, right? Because at the end of the day, a single mother trying to raise a family does not care what Obama or Trump, you know, what their fight with each other
she
is.
She just wants her kids to be taken care of.
Exactly. And so I think that's what gets lost in this whole big political arena. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I understand that.
Okay. What about the whole, did you hear about the Russian and the U.S. Little problems that they had recently around the hacking?
Something about hacking election, but I didn't really listen to that other than that.
Yeah, so that's another thing that, so apparently 35 U.S. diplomats have been, 35 Russian diplomats have been sent back or have been basically kicked out of the United States.
Really?
Yeah, because the U.S. Found out that they were sending information to Russia, which was about the elections, and
wow.
they were saying that they were in a way trying to help Trump win the elections. The Democratic Party was saying that, and so I thought that was interesting. But on the bright side, Russia did not end up doing the same thing. They didn't end up retaliating.
They weren't petty or anything.
Well, that's what I thought at first, but apparently, they wanted to wait. Because Trump takes office in, what, 3 weeks? About 3 weeks. On the 20th,
just
he gets inaugurated.
A little bit more than two.
Yeah, and so once he takes office, then he might recall that decision that was made by the Obama administration.
Yeah.
And so I think it was more of a diplomatic move on Russia's behalf to wait and see what happens when the new president takes over. But I thought that was really interesting to hear about. But yeah, so that's some of the news articles that we had here. But now let's talk about you a little bit. I know you didn't know I was going to do this, but I wanted to know. It's a new year. It's 2017. What are some of your plans for this year?
Graduate.
That's your first and main goal, right?
Make money and save money.
Okay.
Looking for a job. Trying to make sure that I'm thinking after graduation I want to move to Arizona with my cousin.
Okay. And what's out there? What's in Arizona for you?
My cousin in college.
Are you going to try to go to school?
I'm not trying. I am going to school. Like, I'm I know all my life I've lived in Portland, and I really like it here. It's nothing against it. It's just I want to go be able to, at least for college, go see somewhere else, and whether that be Arizona or California or somewhere.
Okay. Do you do New Year's resolutions? Do you? Are you one of those people that sets
New Year, same me.
Same you. Okay. You know, when we were driving over here, you were talking to me about a change that happened with your name. And
oh my God.
Hey, I just want the you know our listeners who listened to our show before because we knew you as Nikki D before, yeah. Right? But there was a new change, so I want you to talk about that. I think that was important for you, and so.
I've gone by Nikki D since like, I think, probably 2 years. I got that name. I don't even remember where I got it. I think it was actually one of my old friends called me that, and Nick Deasy, it came from Andre Hyfe. He was actually, well, that's what he is on social media. That came from him actually about a year ago, and I don't know, some was just like, Nikki D, that's kind of like a more childish name and kid name, and so I took this name, and hopefully I can take it somewhere with radio or whatever I'm going to do in life.
And speaking of Prince Hyfe, right?
Yeah.
AKA Andre. Didn't you bring in a song of his today that you wanted to play?
It's a little preview, and then you guys, we're also going to tell you where else to find his music at.
Okay, so Delphine is going to cue this song up for us, and we're going to take a listen to the verse, and then Nick Dizzy, the new and improved Nick, is going to give you a little more information about how you can find this artist and his music.
Yeah, sometimes I be surprised just to see another day. Cause he died before his G-Day, he ain't get to cut his cake. Now his family tore apart, ain't got no money for his wake. Feeling like a bad dream, but it's the same when we awake. So what you know about pain? Man, you don't know a thing. What you know about living in cars and ain't for 7 days? Still gotta go to school, ain't got nothing close to change. So when you showed up, they all laughed and called you names. Man, I had hatred in my veins. That shit that will not change. I never say no names, bro, that's rules that will not change. Charge it to the gang. R.P. to Brody Spook. We gon' do it for the gang. A sucker flame, don't leave him bang if he disrespect your name. Got a young homie's heart, didn't care what they bang. Northside when I came. When I came, it all changed. Trailblazing out of pocket, but I'm shooting like I'm dang. Then it hit me. Life is what you make it. Shit. And I'm just trying to make it. Then it hit me, man. Life is what you make it. And I didn't work too hard to let a motherfucker take it. Hey, life is what you make
what
it,
you make, man.
And I'm just trying to make it hit me, man. Life is what you make.
And that was Make It, and you can actually find Prince Hyfe on SoundCloud at Prince Hyfe. YouTube, just search Prince Hyfe Make It, and that'll come up. All the other songs will come up at
How do you spell Prince Hyfe?
PRINCEHYPH.
That's right. And you guys heard it. His music was uncut, and it depicts the images of a reality that a lot of African American and Latino males go through, whether it's in Portland or in other cities. I think that if you really want to know how people are living day to day in these neighborhoods and in these streets, it's important that you understand the culture that comes with it. And you could hear that firsthand in Prince Hyfe's music. Nick Dizzy, is there anything you want to add? I know that's your guy. And
yeah, like I've probably listened, like I said before, I've probably listened to his music since I was like probably seventh, eighth grade. And just ever since then, I've always followed him, listened to his music. And back August of 2015, actually, I met him at a concert, and we took a picture, and that's actually, he had posted that, and that's where I got that name from, Nick Deasy. And so ever since then, that's what I've gone by. Like, I changed that Facebook, Instagram, everything.
Okay. Now, is there any message that sticks out to you from his music?
I mean, I've talked to him before, and he's always real positive about stuff. Like, he had a warm clothes and blankets drive over the holidays, and he's had that many years before. So no matter how, like, people see him or whatever, like, you always got to actually get to know someone.
That's right. So there's a lot that you don't see about him, correct?
Yeah.
And you know that about him because you know him personally, but yeah. A regular fan would probably not know that he was doing clothes drives and he's doing all these positive things for his community. And on the other hand, you see his lyrics and it depicts a picture, a true image of the day-to-day life of many people here in Portland that goes unnoticed, also in this mainstream media here, right? So with that being said, Nick Dizzy, what is one thing you plan on doing to change who you were last year? To who you are going to be this upcoming year, this 2017.
Like when I say New Year, same me, people say New Year, new me. Like everyone says that. I'm sure everyone on here has heard that or seen that. I plan on being the same person. Like I'm going to treat everybody with respect around me until I'm shown disrespect and I'm just going to like distance myself from you. Other than that, I mean, I'm sure there's more that I can do in school. You know, like in your class, and you know, I've slacked off a lot. I'm not gonna lie, and but now it's like I really do got to graduate, and only surround myself with people who are productive and like carry themselves as a decent human being. You know.
Yeah.
What have you seen between the difference between? Because I know you've worked with kids a lot, mm-hmm. than kids growing up here, and then in Yemen and in Seattle too.
Man, that's a real good question, Nick. Dizzy, see what I did there?
Yeah.
I think for me, in Yemen, I was a kid myself. I moved to the U.S. For those of you who don't know, I moved to the United States when I was 12 years old. I moved from Sana'a, Yemen to Seattle, Washington, and that's where I went to middle and high school, and then I went to college in Idaho, and then I moved to Portland. Now, while I was in Seattle, I worked with kids while I was in high school. And that was the beginning to my path in mentoring and in trying just to do something with youth. I didn't necessarily always know that I would become a teacher. One of the things that I noticed about kids in Yemen, which was myself as well growing up, we didn't really have the resources that children have here, whether it's computers in the classroom, whether it was cassette, like you know how they have those recorded books.
Yeah.
I remember listening to Harry Potter in school and reading along, and that was how I got better at reading. We didn't have a lot of those resources in schools over there. Schools there were basically a building that had a few tables, a few chairs, and it was first come first serve, you know. If the first person to get there got the chair, basically, and it was a regular blackboard with, you know, chalk
and and
with that being said, we were very, very resourceful. I mean, I remember making robots out of wood. We used to make fake cell phones out of clay. We did everything we could to have fun, regardless of the situation. For those of you who cannot see Nick Dizzy right now, he is laughing hard.
I love his face. I had to say something.
But the reality of it was that I was very resourceful. If something broke, I fixed it by the age of 8. I knew how to cook. I knew how to clean. I knew how to do my own laundry by the age of 7. And those were not any like special skills or anything like that. Every kid knew how to do that. And so like I think we were very resourceful, and we were up there when it came to life skills. We had that down. When I came here to the United States, on the other hand, I saw many opportunities, and I think that's the difference between kids there and here, is that kids here have those opportunities. Now, mind you, I do understand that there are a lot of systematic constructs placed to where it hinders the growth of some kids versus others. But at the same time,
I'm not sure I understand.
At the same time, I did, you know, like through that process, I did also see those kids who were able to take those resources and to make something great out of them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so And here in Portland at the same time, I see a culture. I see a culture. I see a history that is not really spoken about a lot. And that is redlining. That is gentrification that we see in today. That is the Vanport, the entire history of Vanport neighborhood and the entire history of North Portland. And I see the ripple effects of those things happening today, whether it's drugs in our communities, whether it's gang activities in our communities, whether it's, low high school graduation rates, the violence that's happening within teens. And these are just a few setbacks that we're seeing in our communities today. However, I do see resilience in this neighborhood of North Portland. I do see some young minds that are out there trying to change their situations. I do see some amazing young athletes who work hard in the classroom and outside of it. I do see many community organizations that are in place trying to help these kids do better. And so I think I see a lot of opportunities here compared to where I grew up at.
Yeah,
and I think that's why I'm so invested.
Do you, so from coming here, do you think, if you would have stayed growing up in Yemen, do you think you would be where you're at now?
If I stayed in Yemen?
Yeah.
Would it be different?
Well, where do you think you'd be now, or do you think you'd have accomplished what you've accomplished here in the U.S.?
No, I don't think that would have been the case, specifically because, number one, in Yemen, I did have an amazing upbringing. I did have a great life. I did have my two loving parents. However, society there was still kind of tough for an African kid, because there is still that inner that segregation within different cultures. Right, the simple fact that I was an Arabian was used against me on a daily basis. I was called a slave, so I did experience a lot of racism there as well. But at the same time, I did learn a lot from that. Right, that I developed as an individual. When it comes to me becoming this, I think what helped was the opportunities that I had here. Yemen, unfortunately now, if you know a little bit about what's going on over there, there is a war, there is poverty. And I think that would have, because a lot of the people who I grew up with are they are not in professions that they like. They are hiding somewhere from a war that's happening, or they are in the military. And so I think that would have been where I would have ended up.
All right, man. It's good that you made it here, though.
Yeah, I'm glad I did. Because at least here I have the outlets that I was able to go to college. That alone is a huge step, because now I'm a first-generation college student.
Yeah.
And so was my brother, and so was my sister, and we all did it at the same time. So that was a real big accomplishment for my parents, and they celebrated every day.
And if anyone wants to call in, the number is 503-231-8187, and call in with thoughts or
questions. Yeah, and if you have any New Year's resolutions that you'd like to share with us, please call in. It's our first show of the year, and we're excited to hear from you.
Again, that number is 503-231-8187. Thank you.
So, Nick Dizzy, why don't you go ahead and tell me about the second song you chose for us today?
Before I say this, I want you guys to know that it's the name of someone, because the song is actually called Molly by, I forget his name right now. And it's just about a girl that, when you watch the video, it's about a girl that he's in love with, and he has to watch her get married to someone and just act like he's fine with it.
Why'd you choose that song?
I don't know, actually. It's just kind of, I remember seeing it when I was at a shoe store, and I waited like a month or two to finally actually, I found the song, and I was just looking for it off and on, and I thought it'd be good to play.
What was it called again?
Molly.
So it's Little Dicky.
Okay.
So featuring Brandon something.
Okay, so here it is. Let's listen to it.
Yeah, man, This is the softest thing I ever did, but it's about something that's pretty important to me. And that's you, and that's true. Really wish that I didn't care about you anymore, but I do. What do I do when the rap life make a mother choose up in that fight? Make a young couple do something sad like being broke up even though we had life. I don't even know what I could have done. Looking back, thinking that's what I should have done. Wanted you back, but when the fact is I always put you second to rap. I'm not mad that you wouldn't come. And even though I had to move, I ain't move on. Really wish you was a boo, I could prove wrong. But she knows what I'ma do with the new songs. And she know I'm pretty soon when your dude on. Running the rap game with that lane. Always gotta be up on that train or that plane. Ain't nobody wanna feel that pain or that strain. Wishing I ain't gotta get that fame or rap claim. You know I'd give you my last name, but that blame on me. Chasing something, feeling dumb, cause you all I need. Hope you wait until I'm done and I'm all free. But you know I never know when it's gonna be, and I'm sorry. It's the hardest rule to follow. What can I do? I really wish that I could call you. What can I do? You can find another me tomorrow. If that's the hardest pill to swallow, babe. If I woke up and I called it quits, what can I do? If today I gave up all of this, what can I do? Maybe I could get you back tomorrow. And that's the hardest pill to swallow, baby.
And that's you, and that's true. Really wish that I didn't care about you anymore, but I do. What do I do when the rap life make a motherfucker choose up in that fight? Make a young couple do something sad like being broke up even though we had life.
When I'm being dumb and stupid, who the fuck is gonna hit me with the motherfucker jerk face? Who gonna let me know to hit my mother on her birthday? Who gonna let me know when I'll be shopping if a shirt's gang? When I'm on the road, I'll be missing that. Always looking at my phone, you would give me crap. Ever since I've been alone, I've been thinking back, listening to your auto-tune in my mic phone, making us laugh. You know the past was a blast, but it never could last. Pretty sad when your love got a separate path. Used to read when there's nothing to do, but it's funny doing nothing's never nothing when it's done with you. You know I want to still talk, even text and call whenever something going on. I'll be pressing all up in the phone till I press the X, stress the next one on best the X, and you'll forget, but it's best. You the best to me, girl, always bait me something, and when they ripped off you replaced my buttons. But don't be pissed off if I hate your husband, because even when I can't say love ya, I love ya.
It's the hardest rule to follow.
That's true. Really wish that I didn't care about you anymore, but I do. What do I do when the rap life make a motherfucker choose up in that fight? Make a young couple do something sad like being broke up even though we had life.
It's the hardest rule to follow. Thinking of you, I really wish that I could call you. What can I do? You can find another me tomorrow. And that's the hardest pill to swallow.
That was Molly. I forget. I keep forgetting the name of the rapper.
Lil Dicky is his name.
Lil Dicky is his favorite artist.
And now we have someone in here to. We're gonna do an interview.
Her name is.
My name's Marshalia Polstoy. My mom was just on for Kitchen Table Conversations, so you've heard my voice on there before.
That's right. She's not new to this. Now, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
A little bit about myself. I'm 19. I'm a graduate. I graduated in 2015. So I've been out of school for a little while. I'm the fifth child of six. I'm the baby girl. I just got a job at Lloyd Center. So come and see me at the All American Ice Cream and Yogurt Shop.
Okay.
Discount.
There's not a whole lot. I mean, I definitely got a story, but I'm definitely not going to, like, obviously spill it out right now. But what do you want to know?
What's your story? You set yourself up for that one.
I got a story. No, I'm not going to, because it's a lot.
Okay.
I mean, I came from a really rough neighborhood living in the St. John's Woods, and just seeing the things that I've seen and being through what I've been through, there was lots of gang violence, lots of drugs, just a lot of criminal activity. When I was growing up, I've been in shootings, mm-hmm. you know, multiple crossfires as a kid, and I've just seen some things that, you know, no child should see. I've been through things myself that no young woman should have to go through, or anybody in that matter. But everything that happened and everything I've seen and everything I've done definitely made me who I am today, and it's made me stronger. Okay. But my story and my mom's story is definitely something that, like, can be shared over time, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And we look forward to having you here more often.
Oh.
Now, I know that, you know, a lot of people, and the reason why I keep bringing up is the new year. What's your, you know, your resolutions? Mm-hmm. It's because I want to see how people think about the idea of growth, right?
Yeah.
I know that I'm 27 years old. I teach at a high school, and I mentor and I coach, but I'm still growing myself. I have a lot of growth to do, right? And I always wonder, because at the New Year's, for me, it's never like a time just for celebration and partying and all of that. I always look at it as a time of reflection. Majority of the time, I think about those who are no longer with us. Mm-hmm. I always think about all the hardships that I had that year, all the good and the bad that happened. I also think about family and friends, and I always wonder what it is like to be them, and what did they go through that year? How did they grow?
Yeah,
from, you know, from that really past experience.
Yeah, you really sit and examine and reflect.
Yeah, and
sure.
And my thing is, I just want to see your process, and you as well, Nick.
Yeah.
I want to know what that process is for you.
So, 2016. More so the end was very, very hard, you know. It definitely hit us, and everything kind of seemed to start falling apart after losing my job. In, like, October or so, that's when it just seemed to really hit home, and I was down and out of the game for a minute, and I just didn't know what to do. You know, I kind of gave up. I didn't really have any hope within myself. And so this year, you know, starting off the year, you know, getting a job was definitely an encouragement. It definitely gave me a huge boost. And it, I feel like it kind of set me back on that path of, you know, I can do it, you know, because I really felt in 2016, I just gave up. I didn't want to do anything anymore. I just kind of felt worthless and helpless at that point. And my mom always told me, you know, like, don't stress, you know, it's, things will happen, you know, we'll get it however we can. But me being me and me kind of like always working and things like that, I kind of like put the blame on myself. So this year I'm really trying to not do that to myself, not beat myself up so much, because I do that a lot. You know, I take the littlest things and take it to heart. So I'm going to try not to do that, but just work, you know, get the money, and then I want to go back to school. So that's my goal. That's like my really big goal, is go back to school and get an education, and just see where I can go from there.
Right. And thank you for sharing that, because I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who can relate to that, especially coming from a 19-year-old female trying to make it out here, right?
It's rough.
It's a rough world. And,
it is.
You know, it takes a lot of resilience. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of you have to have that hope.
Yeah,
you have to see some kind of a finish,
mm-hmm.
like an image of the finish that you want. You have to visualize it, and you have to go for it, right?
For sure. Oh yeah, for sure. And sometimes that light isn't always there, or it's not shining bright, but it is there. You know, you just gotta really look. And I like what you said about, you know, taking the time to really think about, you know, what your family's been through, what you've been through in the year, and really reflecting on that. And I think that's something that a lot of people should do, and not just at the beginning of the year, not just on January 1st or December 31st, but at different points throughout the year, at different times in their life when they feel like they're kind of in a hole. Step back, think about what you're doing, think about who's surrounding you, And I've had to cut a lot of people off who don't have the same goals, who are very negative. And that's okay. It's okay to separate yourself. It's okay to be solo. That's all right. And for me, I thought it wasn't. And it's just, I'm just kind of riding it out right now and seeing what's going to happen next.
Right. So. And you know, I appreciate you saying that. You know, you cut off a lot of people. And the thing is, people will not always be in your life.
Right.
Correct? But the ones you love, the ones who are meant to be there,
will be there.
Will be there.
Yeah.
And I see your relationship with your mother.
Oh, yeah.
And I see how close you two are. You two are like best friends.
Oh, yeah. That is my best friend. That's my best friend.
And so in those times, those hard times, it's always nice to have that backup, right? That somebody who could say, hey, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're close.
Yeah.
Right? Right. And Mr. Nick Dizzy.
Let me ask you, Aron, what are your goals and what do you hope to accomplish this year?
So you just reversed it on me, huh?
Yeah.
I think for me, it's always been, growth has always been a part of the picture for me. Every day I go to work, there is a classroom full of young individuals who, you know, are like looking at me and waiting for me to give them information.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is a huge responsibility. I never, ever want to waste anybody's time. These kids have so much potential. So one of my goals this year is to be a person who's more intentional with what I do with their time.
Okay.
At the same time, you know, I'm sure many young men at my age will tell you the same. We all have strong egos. And I think one of my biggest things, and this is one of those things that I'm constantly reevaluating, is my ego. I have to check it. I have to make sure that I stay humble, that I continue to follow the process, trust in that, and work as hard as I can with the dream that someday I could take care of my family and start my own family as well, right?
Yeah.
So I think one of those things is to continue with my consistency. And so that was another one of those things that I wanted to do. I'm not one of those people who wakes up and say, oh, this is a new year, I'm a new person, and I'm gonna go to this gym for 2 days and then, you know,
work like that.
It
though,
doesn't,
you
and
know?
It takes consistency. I think I'm the same person that I was yesterday, a week ago, a year ago, but
over time is how you change. It doesn't happen overnight.
Yes, you develop. A tree doesn't grow overnight.
Right.
And so you plant a seed and you keep watering it. You give it the nutrients and the sunlight and it grows.
Yeah.
And I'm the same way. I think I'm growing. I know that.
Of course.
I do have a lot of flaws and I'm working on them. And so hopefully this next year will be a little bit nicer to me.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, Donald Trump don't go too crazy with the office. So, you know, that's another thing. But back to you, Mr. Nick Dizzy. What's your growth process?
Well, first I want to go on record and say, Aron, he runs his class good, but I don't think I really learn anything.
So I guess you got to step up there.
Resolutions right there.
I think you've been doing it, what, like 3 months now?
Yeah, about three months.
I feel like I've learned more in those 3 months than I really did at Roosevelt. I mean, I was there like a year and a half.
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot to me.
Teachers never really cared, and so, like, if you start to, like, mess around or something, they just kick you out. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I've changed a lot since then, but even now I still need to focus more, and so that's going to be my plan, is to focus more and make sure I'm more engaged and not be on my phone as much in class.
Thank you, Lord, for that. I'm glad you noticed.
I plan to pay attention more and make sure that I do graduate on time and I make it to college and I'm not just going to flake off on these goals.
Yeah, well, I'm going to hold you accountable. How about that?
Right. Does that work?
That's good. You got two people watching you now.
Me too.
And Delphine. Speaking of Delphine.
Y'all ain't got to do me like that on the radio.
Yes, Nick, we do.
So
it's
Delphine,
on the record now.
Remember how we said we're going to interview you earlier?
Sure.
So
I'm
guess.
Ready.
Yeah, Delphine's always ready. She taught us all of this, by the way, people. So just remember that. So, Delphine, the first question I'm going to ask you is, what made you interested in doing journalism?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, Aron, because I think that I was always doing journalism, but I think because, you know, maybe in part of, like, sexism, you know, or I don't know, maybe also I grew up, like, very humble, so my folks were more like, you know, farmers and stuff like that, so maybe they really didn't think that this was an option. But from a very young age, I've been taking photos and recording people with microphones. I don't know, I just kind of had a fascination with asking people questions. I'm just a very curious person. I always have questions about people all the time. So I feel like it was kind of more like a natural process for me to be investigating all the time and reporting back. But really concretely, when I started considering myself a journalist, because I don't think that anybody ever suggested to me that that's what I was doing, was about maybe 8-9 years ago when I became involved with community radio. And this was back in Indiana, Bloomington, Indiana. And I was involved with the Native American community. And one of my friends invited me to co-host with her a show called Native Spirits that was, you know, already there. And we just kind of took over. And she was Native and I wasn't. And the idea was that we were to bring, you know, up perspectives of why it's important to care about Native issues, whether you're Native or not. And that was kind of the concept of the show. And so that is when I realized, in fact, that not only did I love radio, but, you know, I was, in fact, a journalist and had been for a minute, maybe.
Yeah, that's very interesting that you say that. I think that you are an amazing journalist, even the way you work with the students at the school. I wish people could see it. You know, but you do spark a lot of interest in this field. What steps did you take to get involved in it? Like, what was the actual, like, process of the learning and, mm-hmm. you know, and the actions you took to become this?
Yeah, I think that community radio in itself is the process. You know, it's just such an amazing resource that did not exist in France. It is a concept that was born here in the United States, actually in Berkeley, in the 1950s, like 1949, I think. But it is a concept that it's all about the people, community members, you know, anybody, nobody, people who know a lot, people who know nothing about radio or not about radio. No matter where you come from, you're supposed to be able to walk into a radio and be taught. And that's kind of what the opportunity I got in Bloomington. It was a very small radio station, so it was just like the one staff person that gave us some, like, hands-on training. Here's a recorder. This is how you use it. And then a lot of trial errors. We went out in the community and had a lot of, like, oh, no, we did not record anything. We forgot to hit the record button. Lots of trial and errors. But my friend Rebecca Riol, I want to give her lots of credit. She was a journalist already, had gone to journalism course. She's also a lawyer and anthropologist. She's an amazing lady. But she set the bar really, really high for us. So from the get-go, we were doing editing, we were doing interviewing and all of these things. So and then coming to KBOO about 5 years ago was just, you know, pushing, you know, some of those limits with here is even more resources because KBOO is much bigger. We have staff. We have lots of trainings. We have lots of volunteers training other trainers. Actually, mm-hmm. there were just a training happening right here in the air room just a few minutes ago where people, as I was engineering, were learning how to, you know, for the future. So that's how it is. I mean, it's popular education. It's people teaching people, you know, popular in the sense of people. And it's really, you know, everybody has something to teach. Everybody has something to learn. And that's what is being brought together in community media.
Do you ever have the feeling that society wants you to hide your ethnicity or where you come from in your background?
That's a very, very good question. Yes and no. I feel the pressure to actually hide where I come from because I feel people exotify me. Once they find out I'm French, I mean, they just exotify the thought of Frenchness. Mm-hmm. I think there is a lot of stereotype about Frenchness. So a lot of people think, you know, those basic, it's romantic. They ask you about Paris. I mean, I'm not from Paris. I've been and visited, you know, I was lucky enough to do that. But so very often I try really hard not to reveal, you know, where I'm from. very early in a relationship with people. But I do feel the pressure because people, you know, will sense an accent very quickly, and so they always ask. And I feel that it is a privilege, you know, of people here in this country who have felt, you know, that maybe, you know, I'm out of place because I have an accent, you know?
Yeah.
And I wish I didn't feel out of place because I'm an American citizen also, you know? So, you know, it's a delicate, you know, place to be because I don't want to be rude to people and say, well, it's none of your business where I come from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's hard sometimes to like actually explain to people why I don't feel like telling them all about where I'm from.
Right, I get it. And I went through the ESL system, and I still have this accent today. But was that a hard transition for you? Like when you moved here from France and you started in your schooling process, was that a tough transition?
Yes, I think it was a very difficult transition because I didn't believe that I had the capacity of being bilingual in another language. So I think that I put a lot of barriers in front of myself. But thankfully, at one point, I was able to actually physically come here and be in the United States. So that was when I was 19. And very quickly, within just a few months, I became bilingual. And out of necessity, you know, because I was living here, I really wanted to talk to people. As I say, I'm very curious and talkative. So I really wanted to talk to people. And and I learned, you know, really, really fast. And that made me feel really good. But at the same time, also, I experienced a lot of just like cultural, you know, cultural shock and cultural differences. You know, French people were very outspoken, pretty straightforward. We curse a lot. And so I made a lot of people very uncomfortable at first. So I had to kind of like tune down some things, you know, to like, yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I feel it worked out maybe.
Okay. Thank you for sharing with us, Delphine.
Yeah.
Aron, have you ever felt like you need to hide your ethnicity or where you're from or feel like you need to lie about it in a situation?
No, not really. I think I'm one of those people. So since I was a very young kid, my father was a soldier in the Eritrean Revolution. And that was one of the reasons why I was born in Yemen, actually, was because the fact that we couldn't be in Eritrea at the time. So since I was a kid, my father always instilled a strong sense of where I was from. He made sure that we knew who we were, my grandparents, who they were, the background that we come from, the family history, and even like the history of our country and the country that we were born in. He was very into community building. He was a community activist back then. At the same time, he was the type of man, and he still is the type of man that always helped other people. He was never about himself. He always brought in people to have lunch with us. He would invite people who were in need, and we would just have lunch together. And you know, so ever since that time, I always had this strong sense of who I was. I never felt for a day that I had to change that or to dumb it down or anything like that. Like Delphine said, I was one of those guys who, you know, I always knew that I am an Eritrean man who was born and raised in the Middle East. I always knew that. And when I came to the U.S., I embraced those different cultures and I embraced everything that I learned, whether it's from the Arabian culture, the African one, or even the third one here in the United States. It never hurts to embrace something. It never hurts to widen your perspective about things. And so I always felt like I stuck out. I always thought that, you know, that's who made me me. And people really had never been against that. I have never had people come up to me and say, oh, you know, are you really like Eritrean? Or I never experienced that. People always seem to be fascinated with the fact that I am Eritrean, and they always had questions about it. And knowing me and my love for who I am and my culture and the culture I was raised in, I always had plenty to say about it.
And if I can add... Nick, also to that question, I think what's hard also for me is because also like around, you know, like different cultures. So I'm from France, but, you know, my culture is more Sicilian and Provençal. And so, you know, it gets more specific. And I feel sometimes, you know, it just gets diluted. You know, people are just like, oh, like they just sum it up. You're from Europe or you're from France, you know, and they don't really like acknowledge and honor my culture also, which is also why sometimes I don't feel like sharing much.
Right. And Delphine, do you see this, I don't know if it's a fear, like I don't want to call it like a phobia, but I'm kind of starting to see, well, been seeing at least for the last few years, this fear of cultures and specifically, like, I see a lot of fear about Islam.
And I think the fear comes from not understanding, because very often when I tell people, well, I'm French, I was born and raised in France, which means I do understand the French culture, but the culture that I actually practice is more Sicilian. It's also very specific, comes from a small village. My grandparents were immigrants, so it kind of like got stuck in time. Even though they were in France for 50 or 60 years, yeah. It was like their culture is like back from the 1950s small village in Sicily, you know? Yeah. So, but a lot of people, you know, America, I think, has, you know, for me, I personally see it as an issue, which is one of cultural erasure. I think that we just lump everything into like, oh, a culture is something that's nice and we can learn about and maybe like even exploit, like, you know, dream catchers for Native Americans, and I can dress like Pocahontas or something like this. But right. That's not what it's about. It's not about consumption. It's about people's identities. So I feel that there is a lack of respect for people's identities through this, you know, kind of attitude that you're talking about, Aron, of just kind of, you know, fearing others in different cultures.
Right. And I'm so glad you hit on that. I think I see a lot of cultures. I see a lot of aspects of cultures being exploited for a monetary income. I mean, if you think about I was talking about this with Nick Deasy the other day. We were talking about coffee and how, like, Starbucks is taking this coffee from Ethiopia and they're paying a farmer a small amount but do you know, like, the amount of labor that goes into growing coffee alone, and such good, like, the quality of it is, it just, you know, it leaves me baffled. And even just the exploit, you know, the how culture is exploited to make some, you know, like, sales and you know, I think there is more to culture. I think that culture is the, you know, people practice these rituals. It's a piece of time. It's a piece of people, you know, and people, like, it's a part of their souls that you're taking and that you're, you know, making a trend out of it. It's not what it was intended for.
Right.
It's knowledge passed from generation to generation. And so I appreciate you, Delphine, for bringing that point up. Now, I'm going to leave you with this last question that I always ask people whom I interview, Delphine, and my question to you is, what would be your advice if there is any kids out there listening to you today? What is your advice to them, specifically to young women?
Well, I have many advice, but I would say, you know, the main one for me is just always be yourself. Mm-hmm. And I know it's kind of like cheesy, maybe overrated, whatever, but I think what I really mean is really learn ways that your ideas about yourself maybe are influenced by other people's ideas, maybe by our culture. You know, sometimes as young ladies, we feel that we don't belong, that, you know, it doesn't really work. It's, you know, I don't fit well. And a lot of the time it's because the culture is telling us that we need to be a certain way or, you know, do things a certain way. So really try to explore, why do you like being you? What makes you feel good about you? Why? Who do you want to be? What do you want people to know about you? Who do you want people to say you are? And these should be the things that you should focus in, you know, enacting and creating for yourself, whatever gender you may be, whether or not you identify on the gender spectrum. Maybe you just want to be, you know, you. And yeah, I think that's my advice.
Thank you, Delphine. Marcelia, what about you? Do you have any advice?
I think my advice specifically for, like, I mean, this can be for anybody, but specifically for young women is to know your worth, and to know that you're beautiful. And I don't mean, like, physically beautiful, but that your soul is beautiful. You know, like everybody is unique in their own way. And I think a lot of times society, you know, downgrades women. And, you know, we're not as equal as men. And I want every young woman to believe that we are, you know, and that we matter, you know. And so I think that would be like my biggest piece of advice, is to know your worth and to know that you're beautiful from the inside out, and your looks don't make you, you know, your heart and your soul make you. So, yeah.
Well put. Thank you so much for being a part of our show.
Thanks for having me.
Nick Dizzy, what about you? You got anything you want to say to your fans out there, to the little ones?
Don't be dumb. Don't just follow. If your friends are going to go steal from someone or go do drugs or drink, like, you don't got to follow that just to be cool. Like, that's what I thought I used to have to do. Like, I wouldn't do it, but I would think, oh, if I don't do that, I'm going to be called a square. And, I mean, let them be mad at you, because they're the ones who aren't going to be going nowhere, or who's going to be a bum in a few years, you know. Like, when you walk across that stage, like, that's what I'm really looking forward to, because I've changed so much, and I'm waiting to just walk across that stage. And, like, I've had, like, I think it's, like, 3 or 4 teachers tell me, like, you're not going to graduate. I've just been plain told that. And so I think when I graduate, it's going to be, like, one of the best feelings. So that's what you got to keep in mind.
That's right. I think we're going to prove all those teachers wrong. I'm looking forward to that moment. Yeah. Now, I guess my piece of advice to you little ones out there is stay positive. I know you see a lot of negativity out there. You know, well, people out there are going through some tough times every now and then, and the media tends to focus more on that. But there's a lot more to you than what people are telling you to be. You could always find that spark and follow it. Always remember that you are special to somebody out there. With that being said, check in back with us next month.
First Wednesday.
The first Wednesday of the month.
7 p.m.
It's the first. February 1st.
All right, man. I want to give a shout out to all my friends that's listening, and everyone that's listening, and thank you.
Yeah, we'd love to say thank you to you people. Happy New Year. Own it. It's your year.
And keep it real.
With me, Aron.
Nick Dizzy.
Marshalia.
My
chest.
Take 6 quarters out of the pocket and drop it in the box. Hop the 48 off to pay homage. It stops often. I jot my observations, watching citizens walking off of the Joe Metropolitan. Yeah. Proletarians and wayward sons with old Filipino men speaking in their native tongue. And the day has just begun. Greeted by the scent of a bum, smelling something like beer, barf, and dung. A brother in Jabos in the back, all alone, marinating in a pair of half broken headphones, mumbling rhymes. Same time begin to pen mine, appreciating God's design. Rewind, sister, reminds me of a smile in the back of my memory. Wonder if I see her again, will she remember me? I'm not trying to holler, I swear. I'm just weary of the way we hop a ride and just sit there and stare. Prepare
for my night. All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
The World Arts Foundation Incorporated and KBOO would like to invite you to its 32nd annual tribute to the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on Monday, January the 16th, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, located at 7600 Northeast Gleason. Invited guests will include a multitude of speakers and performances that includes the Portland Interfaith Gospel Choir and choirs from the Portland Public Schools, African drumming, and the acclaimed Jefferson Dancers, and much, much more.